Welcome to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Today on Central Time, it's Food Friday, and we'll talk to Chris Kimball of America's Test Kitchen. That's coming up in about 10 minutes.
First, President Obama was in Africa earlier this week in his second visit since he was elected. That got the U.S. media's attention for a few days.
Our next guest says he hopes the media and the American public pay more attention to Africa and clear up some myths and misconceptions. Ambassador Johnny Carson joins us now. He was Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs until March. He's also served as an ambassador to a number of African nations. He's now with the United States Institute for Peace. Ambassador Carson, welcome to the show.
Rob, thank you. Glad to be with you this afternoon.
Now, we usually only see the bad news that comes out of Africa, disease, famine, and war. Does that view from the media give us a skewed impression?
Rob, I think it does. I think Africa is changing, and Africa is changing very rapidly and in a positive direction. Democracy is on the rise and gaining a stronger and stronger foothold across sub-Saharan Africa. The number of crises in Africa have declined over the last two decades, and we have seen Africa emerge as a great pole of economic growth. Recently, the World Bank indicated that six of the 10 fastest-growing countries and economies in the world are located in Africa, and 10 of the top 20. Africa should be a destination for American business, American investment, and for American trade.
It should be, but is it?
It can be, and it should be. I think there are two things that are needed. One is greater interest on the part of American companies, large, medium, and small, and an increasingly more positive regulatory environments from African countries as well. Many of our major corporations are doing business in Africa. Boeing, for example, sells its airplanes to the top airlines across the continent, South Africa Airways, Kenya Airways, Ethiopia Airways, Air Morocco, and Air Egypt. General Electric sells many products across the continent, and some of our consumer companies like Coca-Cola do a lot of business there. But as President Obama pointed out, it's time for some of our energy companies to get into the business as well. Not only in pumping oil and gas out of the continent, but also helping to set up transmission and distribution and generation of power, which is vastly needed across the continent.
You mentioned a few moments ago that we see a rise in democracy around Africa. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Sure can. President Obama's trip to Senegal, South Africa, and Tanzania was an opportunity to acknowledge and applaud the democratic progress that has occurred not only in those three countries, but also in many others across the continent. In Senegal, we saw President Macky Sall defeat the outgoing president, Mr. Wade.
Sounds like we've lost Ambassador Carson. We'll try redialing him in just a moment. I'll say coming up in just a few minutes, we've got Chris Kimball with America's Test Kitchen. He'll have some recipes, I believe, tell us a little bit about how astronauts eat in space. And if I'm not mistaken, we might get a margarita recipe from him. That's coming up with Chris Kimball in just a few minutes. They're redialing Ambassador Carson, one of the joys of live radio here. Look around for a thumbs up from Chris. Yes? No? We'll be back on Central Time coming up on Monday. Do you remember off the top of your head, Veronica? Oh, no. Here we go. We've got Ambassador Carson online. Ambassador Carson, are you there?
I am.
We lost you from the line there.
Okay.
So you were in the midst of telling us the story of democracy's progress in Africa and orderly transitions of power handed over in elections.
We've seen over the last decade sitting presidents lose elections and step aside quietly and peacefully. We've seen presidents die in office, and we've seen their successors move into the presidency without interruption or disruption. We've seen very tight and highly contested elections in places like Liberia and in Kenya and in Nigeria, and in each of those instances, the opposition stepped aside, and the winners were allowed to take their place. We've seen a decrease in the number of military coup d'états across the continent, and all the polling data that we see, and it's quite good, indicates that Africans support democracy and representative governments.
I wanted to take our last minute or two to talk about Nelson Mandela. We're watching the news. He is apparently in very poor health, has been for some time. Can you, as a former ambassador in Africa, can you talk about his influence across sub-Saharan Africa?
There is no doubt in my mind that Nelson Mandela is probably the most significant political figure in Africa over the last 60 years. His dignity in coming out of jail after 27 years and leading South Africa to a new political dispensation that ended apartheid stands out as one of the major political achievements, not only in Africa but globally over the last 50 or 60 years. No one, no political figure has the stature or the dignity or respect of Nelson Mandela. He is a personal political icon and hero for many Africans and for many around the world who believe in democracy, respect for human rights, and human dignity.
And just briefly, do you think he's inspired leaders around the continent to emulate his example?
I think he is a part of the democracy wave that we are seeing. His willingness to come in, be elected, serve for one term, and step down has helped to give the democracy a very, very strong and powerful symbol and figure.
Ambassador Carson, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Ambassador Johnny Carson. He's former Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs. By the way, he wrote a piece that was on CNN, and I just threw a link up on our Facebook page, the Central Time Facebook page, before we went on the air.
And coming up, we'll talk to Chris Kimball of America's Test Kitchen. He has some cooking advice and a tasty margarita recipe. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Monday, Joy Cardine talks with Wisconsin Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen about the state budget and a lot more. That's Monday after 7 on The Joy Cardine Show.
Noah Ofshinsky joins us now, and he's got a look at some headlines we're keeping an eye on. Thanks, Noah. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Time for Food Friday. This Sunday, you might hear a new yet familiar voice on our airwaves.
Chris Kimball is the host of America's Test Kitchen Radio, one of the brand new shows coming to the Ideas Network, and he's here with us now to give us a sneak peek.
And Chris, what should we look forward to hearing on the radio show that you're really excited about?
Well, first of all, radio is 10 times harder than television and 10 times more interesting because you can go so much farther afield in the kitchen and do so many more things. So it's sort of the show we've always wanted to do but never really could because on television, which we love, but you're showing how to make a recipe or two. And you can't stray too far because you need to keep the continuity of the cooking. Our show has lots of different segments. We do call-ins. I do an interview segment where I talked to Ron Finley this week, who's the Gorilla Gardener of South Central L.A. We've talked to experts on dogs. We've talked to people about cognition and the brain and taste and how all that works. Talked to Mary Roach about her book on astronauts and how they cook in space and her new book, Gulp, you know, about the digestive system. So that's good. We do a wine segment where we don't just taste wines. We sort of explore a particular topic. That's great. We do tastings. We do gadget reviews. We do a recipe challenge every week. You know, it's just a lot of different things. And it's we stay away from doing much real cooking because you can't really, I think, cook effectively on the radio. But there's a whole bunch of other topics around that are really fun.
So you really cover a broad range of topics, and I want to ask you about that the cooking part, you know, at least for food shows as we know it, think the Food Channel or PBS food shows, you know, you see this frying pan and the oil sizzling and the steak in the pan, and you can't smell it, but it's very, it's still as close to a sensual food experience as you can get without being there and sticking your hands in the dough. For radio, how do you make food come alive?
Well, first of all, food in the last 30 years or 20 years has come a long way from just watching Julia Child cook. So if you think about two people sitting in a bar having a beer, you know, and talking about food, there's just a whole bunch of topics that make sense.
So we have come a long way since Julia Child and even, you know, the content on the Food Network, which is largely visually based. You kind of get excited just looking at the food. But I suppose you kind of got the whole theater of the mind that you said has no limits. When you're talking about a show like yours, you can just talk about it and imagine astronaut food or whatever it is you're diving into that day.
Well, yeah, you talk to Mary Roach, who's just hysterically funny, about how astronauts eat. And there's no gravity, of course. And one of the things they found out was that originally they didn't have a table because, of course, it makes no sense to sit in a table when there's no gravity, right? You just, like, float around and eat. So, but the astronauts liked the idea of sitting around for dinner, you know, for meals. So they actually put a table in with Velcro seats, you know, so you could sit down. And then the kinds of food and how do you create food, because you can't have crumbs, you know, because crumbs float all over and get into the instruments. And, you know, it's just an interesting, it's a starting point. And if you think about the Food Network, you know, the Food Network really isn't about cooking, is it? I mean, it's about all the surround. And so, sure, people are cooking, but it's sort of like Car Talk isn't about cars, you know. The Food Network really isn't about food or isn't about cooking. It's about everything else around it. It's just a common entry point. So I think the food certainly has plenty of things you can do. I mean, on Car Talk, they don't actually fix cars.
Right.
They talk about cars, and the cars are a starting point for a conversation. And I think radio, I mean, you know this, radio is about narrative. It's about storytelling. So you have to be able to tell, create stories with food as a starting point, but you're telling stories, and that's what makes good radio, and that's hard, very hard to do well. It's really an art.
Do you think that we're ripe culturally for a show like this, a radio show like this right now? It seems to me that more and more people are interested in cooking and want to talk about it at any level, at any entry point. Is it time for this right now?
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, I remember 2 years ago when we started working on the show, and I would talk to some producers, and they'd say, well, we have a food show. And I said, that's kind of like saying to the Food Network, oh, we have a cooking show. I mean, it's like, yeah, okay, but, you know, it's like one of the big topics of conversation in this country. And look at the number of books published about it, or look at the number of blogs or the websites. I mean, everyone talks about food. There's thousands of entry points into the topic. One show on food seems, you know, kind of silly because there's no such thing as just a food show. You could do 100 different kinds of food shows. And so, sure, I think people should use it as a jumping off point. I can imagine dozens of ways of doing food shows.
The only thing that bums me out about your show being on the radio is that nobody can see your bow tie.
Well, you know, I think the great thing about radio is you can imagine it, you know. So the idea of thinking about that visually is probably more impressive than actually seeing it. So there's, I mean, it's the virtual bow tie, right?
Yeah, I don't know. You've got some pretty cool bow ties there that I've seen.
I have quite a collection. Yes, I have well over 100. So in all shapes, sizes, and colors.
You may need a Mr. Rogers-type segment where you describe the bow tie of the hour.
It's funny you should mention that, because I've always talked about the show, you know, sort of like Mr. Rogers. Like, it's comfortable, you know what to expect.
Yeah.
He just outlasted the competition, right? I mean, he just kept going. And I think, you know, in public media, I have to say, I love it for a variety of reasons, but it gives you an opportunity to find an audience slowly, and then build, and then really do things that would never necessarily work in a commercial environment because you have about 2 weeks to make it work. And there's something to be said for slowly developing an editorial product, TV or radio, and finding an audience. And I think that one of the great strengths of public media is exactly that. I mean, Mr. Rogers, I don't know how he did in his first year. Probably it took him a few years to sort of develop the show. And I think that's what's great. I mean, commercial media is so, you know, you have 5 days to sort of make your numbers. And that's what's one of the great things about public media.
Chris, you've been involved in food for years and years, deeply involved. You've written cookbooks. You've launched influential food magazines like Cooks Illustrated. Are you still as excited about food now as you ever were now that you've...
Oh, yeah. I'm in the last 2 years. I mean, for a while, I used to cook all the time because I was doing cookbooks and other things. I love to cook, and my kids were young. And then I would say there was a period where I was doing less cooking because I was so busy with the business and other things. And now, the last 2 years, I've really gotten back into it. I cook almost every night. And because I've changed my cooking style, I've really branched out more. And I just love it now because I have obviously have the basics down by this time. And I'm really interested in new ways of looking at cooking. And I found that most of what I've learned is of a piece. You know, it's got the Northern European tradition mostly. And then I picked up sort of Southern European. But there's all this other ways of thinking about putting food together. You know, Southern Mediterranean, Turkey, Morocco, other places. And it's just a different, it's not just different spices. It's just thinking about food in totally different ways. And that's really exciting because you never get to the end, you know. So you go through iterations of food. You know, you sort of get to the end of one act and you get to the next. And I don't know which act I'm in now, but it's it's really interesting because it's not just about how to hold a knife now. It's about, oh, I see. So you can think about putting food together in a different way entirely. And I eat many more grains and salads and things than I used to. So, you know, like tabbouleh is a variation on a very long tradition. And so you think about parsley and you think about bulgur and you think about all these things and how they go together and how to combine flavors. And, you know, you learn every time you step in the kitchen. It's great.
Yeah, that's perfectly said. It makes me get excited about cooking again. And I know that this summer is a huge cooking season. Is there a recipe, one that you're excited about right now that you could share with us and maybe we could post on our Facebook site?
Sure. Let's see. There'd be particularly summer. Actually, you know, the thing I just did this recently is, and it's not a new recipe for us, it's our margarita recipe.
Uh-huh.
But it's really interesting because you take a standing mixer and you take limes and lemons and you juice them using the paddle attachment. And so it takes just like 15 seconds and you juice, you know, you can juice a dozen limes and lemons. And it's one part triple sec, one part tequila, and one part the juice of the limes and lemons, 4 teaspoons each of the zest from each of them, and a quarter cup of sugar. And the secret is you let that juice and sugar sit for at least 4 hours or overnight. You just let it sit in the refrigerator, and it mellows out the acidity and gives you a deeper lime and lemon flavor. Then you combine it the next day with a tequila and a triple sec, and it's just spectacular. It's really good.
And it's from Chris Kimball, so you know it's going to be good.
This is the world's best margarita, yeah.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for talking today. Appreciate it.
Yeah, great pleasure. Thank you.
That was Chris Kimball with America's Test Kitchen Radio. You can hear him on that show here on the Ideas Network, Sundays at 10 a.m.
And we've got a link to that delicious-sounding margarita recipe that you may want to try out this weekend on the Central Time Facebook page.
I really want to try it. My one concern is that it involves a lot of premeditation. You've got to, like, he wants you to have the lime and the lemon sitting for 4 hours or overnight, and when I want a margarita, I want it now.
Come on, Rob.
Yeah.
You got to wait for good things.
Well, I will try it out sometime, and maybe I'll even be patient and do it the way he suggested. Maybe even this weekend.
If you try out the recipe and let us know, give us a holler on the Facebook page. Let us know how it is. And something else you can do on the Central Time Facebook page. Just yesterday, we launched our first Curious Wisconsin segment where we answer questions about quirky things in the state that you might be wondering about, you might want an answer to. Rob, yesterday's question was yours.
Mine, about why the big M is by the hill in Platteville. It turns out the answer is mining. It was in honor of what was then a thriving mining industry in Platteville. Phil, and so we got the answer to that. Now it's your turn. Either on the Central Time Facebook page, you can leave your Curious Wisconsin question, or we've got to tell you about our hotline. You can call 855-683-5422. That's 855-683-5422. Leave us a message and share your question, the thing that you are curious about in Wisconsin.
And coming up Monday on Central Time, we'll be joined by Wisconsin's own Fox. The band has got quite a following in Wisconsin and beyond, and they'll be dropping by to play us a few songs live from our very own Buck Studio. That's coming up Monday during our 4 o'clock hour.
We'll also be talking about the potential problems that arise from using birdsong apps out in nature, how our utensils affect the taste of our food, and a coming Arctic economic boom.
That's all coming up on Monday's broadcast of Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Now that we've finally got some nice weather going on in Wisconsin, you'll see a lot of people riding around the state on their motorcycles.
And, of course, because Milwaukee's home to the Harley-Davidson headquarters, there's a lot of motorcycle pride in Wisconsin from Harley lovers and others.
Now, since we're at the height of motorcycle season, we thought we'd talk about it with a Wisconsin native who's ridden all over the Badger State and the upper Midwest. And we want to hear from you, too. Do you ride a motorcycle? What do you love about it? And what are some of your favorite routes in the Midwest? Call us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can shoot us an email to talk@WPR.org.
We've got Fred Milverstead in the studio. He's the author of One More Ride, Fred and the Craft of Motorcycle Meditations. He's a Wisconsin native who spent most of his life in and around Madison. Fred, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Now, in your book, you tell a lot of stories, but I want to start with the big picture. I'm not a motorcycle guy myself, and I see people, and I just, it looks fun and yet scary. What, for you, makes you love tooling around on a motorcycle?
I think the first thing is the freedom, and I also think you find this on bicycles. The big difference, of course, is the motorcycle's wheels go around much faster. There is with it a great need for experience, awareness, focus. And you start with balance. It's all about balance. You have to find a bike that fits you right, or you convert it to the degree that it fits you right. And after you have those things together, you can go off and enjoy yourself for the most part. But the focus and awareness are really key.
And you talk about your dad. Rode a motorcycle. What are some of your memories of him and his bike?
Well, by the time I was old enough, which was maybe 4 or 5, he was down to a Cushman motor scooter. But in the 20s and even at times in the 30s and 40s, he rode bikes. And when he got the little Cushman, he sometimes would give me rides on it. And I remember going down Johnson Street at 30, 35 miles an hour, standing between his legs on the little platform. I recall him bringing it into our apartment on Langdon Street, which was 131, the Pillars. And first floor apartment, he brought it up the stairway and pushed it down the hall and into the living room where he had laid down a tarp. And commenced to take it apart.
What did Mom think about that?
She didn't like it. She didn't like him giving me rides either. And the interesting thing about my father and me as far as motorcycles goes is he discouraged me from buying one. But it wasn't for any of the usual reasons that you would expect. Instead, he said, it makes a loner of you.
It makes a loner of you, he thought.
Yeah, he says, well, when you're going to go out with a gang of people, go here to there and so forth, they all climb into a car together, and off they go in the group, and you get on your bike, and you ride along by yourself. Now, personally, I've always enjoyed riding a motorcycle by myself than I have riding with a group. Now and again, I'll find a good pal, and we'll ride together at length. But once again, you have to be comfortable with the people that you're riding with, and you have to have a great deal of trust in each other.
Why is that? Why do you have to trust the people you're riding with?
So they don't come over into your lane and knock you down or do silly things. Mm. I mean, a lot of us do silly things, and I've done plenty on motorcycles. But if you're riding with another person or maybe two, you have to be very conscious of how the other person rides so that you don't have to worry about them while you're out there with them.
Now, you've done a lot of riding by yourself. Do you feel like your dad was right and that you're a loner when you're out there?
I might be a loner to start with. I've been a writer all of my adulthood, and writing is a very lonely enterprise. There's really no one there. You don't want anyone there. There's usually editors hanging over your shoulder at one step or another along the way. But it's a solitary profession or avocation. And somebody once told me writing is thinking. And I prescribe to that. And I really don't want other people around interfering with my thinking. I was a sports writer for many years, and I got to the point where I really found crowds to be distasteful.
That's hard for a sports writer.
It is. So I ran with it for a long time, but anything between 17 and 88,000 is too many for me.
Now, when you're out writing as a writer, are you consciously or not composing or getting your ideas or putting things together, or is that left behind when you hit the road?
No, it all soaks in as I go along, and then upon reflection, there are certain things that certainly will stand out in your mind and memory, and they're the ones that are worth recalling later in a story or an essay or whatever.
And in your title, you're talking about motorcycle meditation.
Yes.
I've never done real meditation or motorcycle meditation, but does it feel like you're meditating as you're out there on the road?
Well, there's two different things there. Out on the road can be a very zen-like experience, and you asked at the beginning why I enjoy it, and that's probably the highest point for me in the rides is I feel very much at one with the road, my bike, and the environment. It's only other people who will screw that up for you. As you know, as bicycle riders or automobile riders, there's so many people who pay so little attention to what they're doing out there. And others who may be paying attention go out of their way to be rude. And at times on my rides when I can largely get away from all that is when it becomes blissful.
I want to talk about some of the places you've been in Wisconsin and around the Midwest. What is the favorite, or what's one of the most memorable routes you've taken?
My favorite of all time remains the Driftless area, which I prefer to call the Driftless Zone because it gives it a bit of mystery to it, and there is a great deal of mystery about the Driftless Zone, considering the age of it, the history, and the fact that there's nowhere quite like it anywhere else in this country or North America. And I've probably ridden most of my 100,000 miles plus in that area, either in Wisconsin or southeastern Minnesota and northeastern Iowa, and even the strip in northern Illinois on the way down to Galena. And I think it's 15,000 square miles. And except for weathering, it's essentially the same country as it was 450 million years ago. The Baraboo Range, I've always enjoyed greatly, but I love the Kickapoo Valley and the Wisconsin River Country and Highway 35 up the Mississippi, and even to the other side, which is Highway 61, leaves La Crosse and goes up the Minnesota side. So that's the best. 2 years ago, we were in the Black Hills, and that's everybody has to go there at least once. We were fortunate to go in late June, a few weeks ahead of the annual rally, so we pretty much had the whole hills to ourselves, and that was gorgeous.
We're talking to Fred Milverstedt about his adventures on a motorcycle throughout the upper Midwest. And we'd like to hear from you. Is he kind of telling your story? What's life like when you're out on a motorcycle? Or do you look on the people on their bikes with envy? Like, oh, if I just had the time or the freedom, I'd be out there with them too. Give us a call at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Or if you ride a motorcycle, just tell us your favorite tour, your favorite route to take. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. I'm Rob Verrett.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Monday at 1 on the Kathleen Dunn Show, it's All Things Political. Kathleen will speak to our guest expert about what's going on in the political world. You'll hear that Monday at 1 o'clock on the Ideas Network.
Right now, here's a few headlines in the news with Noah Ovshinsky of the WPR News Department. Thanks a lot, Noah. You can catch more news coming up in a little bit. This is Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Verrett.
And I'm Veronica Rickert.
We're continuing our discussion with author and Wisconsin native Fred Milverstedt about his adventures in the upper Midwest on a motorcycle. We're taking your calls now about your motorcycle journeys. Why do you love to ride? What are some of your favorite routes in Wisconsin or around the Midwest? What makes riding a motorcycle special for you? Call 800-642-1234 or email talk at WPR.org. Well, we'll go first to Mooney in New Glarus. Mooney, hi, you're on the air.
Hokahoy! Ka-unka!
Is this the same Mooney I can read about in my book?
Yes, sir, it is.
Well, hokahoy to you too, buddy.
Mooney, I read about you. You rode with Fred. Tell us, what's it like to ride with Fred?
It's that trust and freedom of riding with another person that you have to really understand. And Fred is one of those people.
How'd you meet Fred?
I met him in the post office in New Glarus.
You both were there on your bikes, or?
I don't really remember if he was on my bike. I had my Excelsior Henderson parked outside, and I believe I came walking out of the post office, and he was standing there admiring it.
Ah.
I was laughing at it.
He was laughing at it.
And so what's the best trip you took with Fred Mooney?
Up through that driftless zone, up into the Richland County area. It's just beautiful. And like he says, it's the same territory that it was 450 million years ago.
Mooney, thank you so much for calling in. And Fred, Mooney is one of those people you met on the road and formed that trust with to go riding. Anybody else? I think you've got one more person out in the lobby there that you've ridden with.
Barbie is in the lobby, and Barbie and I are old friends from high school in Madison. We grew up 8 blocks from each other, and our lives went different ways and then connected again. And we've been together 12 years, and Barbie has ridden with me all of that time, and was the co-star of my ride to the Black Hills 2 years ago, which is the longest ride she's taken.
Is that the longest one you've taken, or have you taken longer trips?
Well, I think the Boulder run was longer. I rode to Boulder to visit my son and his family, and when I came back up, it was I went north and to Deadwood, and stayed over there, and then cut east on the last leg, which was 613 miles in 16 hours.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling in, Mooney. We've got Melissa in Cameron with us now. Melissa, hi. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say that last year I took the motorcycle safety class as a dare for my husband. And it was the best thing I ever did. Like, I went from never, ever thinking I would ride a motorcycle to 4 hours of class and practicing, you know. And I just wanted people to know that even if they took the class and they're still scared, if they keep practicing, they'll just get better and enjoy it more and more and more, you know.
Hey, Melissa, I mean, do you just tool around Cameron, or have you taken any big over-the-road trips?
Not yet, but I like to go down old Highway 14 or in between, like, Cameron and Bloomer and stuff on Highway SS. That's a real pretty route.
All right, and your husband rides?
Yes, he does.
Okay. Well, it sounds like a great dare. I'm glad you took him up on it, Melissa. Fred?
I would recommend to everyone that they take the Motorcycle Safety Foundation rider course. I didn't take it until I returned to riding after a long hiatus, and within short order learned many things that I didn't know and other things that I'd been doing wrong. So any new or returning rider, I heartily recommend it.
All right. Thanks a lot, Melissa. Have some great great adventures on your bike. We've got Mike in Madison with us now. Hi there, Mike.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, Freddie, who knew? I used to ride an Indian, but that was only out of the pub at closing time. His name was Carl Standing Hawk.
Okay.
Don't joke, Freddie.
Hi-o.
I want to take you out for a Chicago Zen hot dog. It's one with everything. I'll leave my phone number.
All right, thank you.
Mountaintop, Freddie.
Thank you, thank you.
All right, love you.
Another friend of yours, Fred? Maybe, maybe not. All right, thanks for the call, Mike. You mentioned the Indian, you mentioned some of the gear. What was your first bike, Fred?
I've always been a Honda guy, and my first one was a Honda S90, which was a bare step up from their little 50cc scooter. And this, in fact, wasn't much more than a scooter. It was done up in a snappier little package. But I went from the 90 to a 160 to a 305 and then a 750.
These are sizes of engine,
engines,
right?
CCs. And I have an 1100 Shadow, a 1985 Shadow. And the big one is Brunhilde, the Valkyrie. And Brunhilde has 1520 cc's on a flat six engine.
And now, I don't know how much this is true now. There was, you're a Harley or you're not a Harley person. Do you see on the road when you're stopping at a truck stop looks from Harley people?
It's much better than it used to be, particularly in the 90s when everybody and their brother who didn't have a Harley decided to buy one. There was a period there when they all thought that they were, can I say the tits on here?
No.
I guess not. That's changed over the years. And now there is a much broader respect for everybody out there on bikes. And as far as looks go, when I'm on the Valkyrie, I get plenty of looks because it's the world's largest motorcycle. And that flat six engine makes an impression on people.
It's a tank on the road, kind of.
Well, it's not. It handles extremely well unless you're parked at a curb and trying to get away from it, or having to push it around the parking lot. It has no reverse gear, and it weighs 840 pounds. So I end up inching my way forward much more often than I do backing up. But once you get it out on the road, I think it handles as well as any bike I've ever ridden.
Go back to the phones now. We have Joyce on the line in Green Bay. Hi, Joyce.
Hi. Well, I drive a Honda Silverwing, which is a scooter style, but I ride with the Harleys, and I ride with my kids, and I have lots of fun. We do a Houghton trip every year up to Houghton, which is a beautiful area, up to Copper Harbor. And actually, we went over the 15th of June. We went up to Houghton. And I'm going tomorrow with my son and my daughter and her husband, and I really enjoy it. I got my license when I was 60. I am 70 now, and still loving it.
Good for you. The Silverwing is fitted out to be a little more of a road bike than the other scooters, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a road bike. I've had it up to 80, but I don't like to go that fast. I try to keep it at 75 or less. But, you know, accidentally sometimes. And I started with a 150, and then I thought, oh, that was because I was making trips with him. I thought I need something bigger because that you weren't supposed to go over 55. So then I went looking for a bike, and I tried a 250, and I thought, oh, this is it. And my son said, Mom, you better look some more because I don't think you're going to be happy. So then I took a 400 for a ride, and he said, I think you should still look, Mom. And then I tried out this Honda and a Bergman, and the Bergman was 50 cc's more, but this is just under 600 cc's, and I really like it. That's going to be mine until I don't ride anymore.
Joyce, thank you.
As long as you're comfortable with it, that's what counts, and keep the rubber side down.
Joyce, thank you so much for calling, and have a great trip tomorrow. Fred, Joyce mentioned she's coming on 70 now, and you write about getting older and riding. Are you slowing down now?
Well, I've certainly slowed down compared to years ago when I somehow was compelled to see how fast any of my bikes would go. The thing about going that fast is there are very few roads you can find where you can go that fast. You're either going to come across curves and you're going too fast, even on the interstate, or there's always the police. And if you tangle with the police two or three times over a year or two, you're going to find yourself paying great insurance premiums, and that's not ideal. So now I think I have backed off. It's hard to go the speed limit on a motorcycle, so I tend to waver 5-10 miles above it, but I'm always have my eye out for Smokey.
In our last minute or so, Fred, what is your next trip? What do you have in the books?
Well, I don't know. This book tour is starting to take me here and around, and there has been discussion of doing something in the Black Hills, if not the week of the rally, in that time frame, and possibly do a couple of readings out there. And if that comes to pass, I'm going to take my good-natured time getting out there and back. South Dakota, last time I went across it, it rained from Mitchell all the way to Deadwood. And on the way back, the heat index was 105. So it's not exactly ideal riding climate.
Fred, thank you so much for being here today and sharing your stories.
Thank you. Thank you both.
That was Wisconsin native Fred Milverstead. His book is One More Ride, Fred and the Craft of Motorcycle Meditations.
And if you're in the Madison area, Fred will be speaking about his book tomorrow downtown at A Room of One's Own at 6 o'clock.